Welcome back to another episode of Small Town Talk. This week we are sitting with
Connor O'Neill from Cottage Bakery. I had so much fun talking to him and learning about all the nuances of bread making.
Pretty amazing stuff. I mean, to think of where he came from to where he is now, I mean, it's wild. And he's got a cult following at the community bakery known as the Cottage.
I think anyone that lives in Edmonds or close to Edmonds knows about Cottage and how fantastic their bread is.
Yeah, so take a listen and enjoy this episode.
And pick up some bread.
Yeah, go get some bread. It's delicious. Welcome to the podcast, Connor from Cottage Community Bakery.
That's right.
That's what we call it, right?
Yeah.
Welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much.
We're excited to have you here.
You've been on our short list to have in since rebooting the podcast, just because we're big fans.
Well, your bakery, honestly, it's the best bread.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
So what got you into bread in the first place?
It's actually a pretty crazy story. I went to WSU and I studied to become, I wanted to actually become a professor in English. And I was all set up and on track to actually, you know, really pursue a career in English literature. And all the while, I had been baking a bunch of bread just in my college apartment at home. And things just kind of like spiraled into this, you know, just unrelenting, you know, exploration of sourdough. And I think this has happened to a lot of bakers globally. And it's been really fun, you know, and it sort of accidentally fell into place when I started just baking a bunch of bread, you know, back at my college apartment after graduating, came back to Edmonds and started just baking a ton of bread in my parents' garage. This was before the bakery had even started, really. It became a little bit more serious.
Did you have an oven in the garage?
I did. You know, I had investigated like the best route to go if I were to turn this into a business someday. And I had been following a couple of local bakers, you know, who had started what's known as like a micro bakery, basically just baking from their home and like how they can scale up to sort of supply bread to their community, you know, not quite a commercial bakery, but a much smaller operation. And there's an oven called a Rofco B40 that allows you to make about 12 loaves of bread every hour, which is like pretty sizable compared to what you can do in your home oven.
Yeah.
And so I purchased one of those kind of on a whim. And was like, you know, turned to Michaela, my sister, who's now the GM at the bakery, and was like, I think we should like, I'm going to go for this. I'm going to turn this into a business. And so that was kind of the path that that we forged. And so it just kind of slowly but surely, you know, started off very, very small and sort of accidentally, and it grew into what it is today.
So you took your like, everyone has that phase, right? Of like well, I'm going to bake, especially in COVID.
I was just going to say, like, I mean, COVID, everyone became a baker.
Absolutely.
Let's try baking some bread. You just took it and ran with it.
Yeah. That's kind of how it happened. More specifically, like we had a neighborhood, my parents live in Blue Ridge. And so, you know, just a few blocks away from where the bakery is today, we had a neighborhood like rummage sale in the summer of, I want to say it was like June of 2018. So a good bit ago now. And my dad was like, you're baking all this bread and like trying your best to give it away to friends and local restaurants and things like that. This was before we had filed for an LLC. It was like just recipe testing at best. And he was like, why don't you just bring a cart down to the front of the driveway? And as the neighbors are going by on the rummage sale, they'll pick up any baked goods and on they go. And so it just like, I did that and like cleared out, like the pastries and bread and everything were just cleared out within a few hours. And so that's kind of how it accidentally started, is how I like to tell the story.
So then after the rummage sale, did you do like, what was your next?
My next step was quite literally like, how do I start a sourdough bread business? How do I, you know, getting online and figuring out what permits I needed and like how to set up a business bank account, how to file for an LLC, like making it more official so I wasn't breaking any rules. Mm-hmm. And it was pretty cool. So you work with the Department of Agriculture. Similar to like the Snohomish County Health District, they just want to make sure that you're making the food, you know, above standard and like everything is sanitary and things like that. And so you work pretty closely with them. They come out and they inspect your space and then you're set to go. You can file for your LLC and you can start taking sales. And so that's kind of what we did. And we hosted a weekly Saturday pop-up. I don't know if you guys were familiar.
Dragged my kids down and we'd stand for an hour. Yeah, they're like, no, what?
That was
we
wild,
get our pretzel?
Really, that was crazy. I mean, that like, I feel like it started off so small and just like a couple people, and all of a sudden it's like a line down the street and are like wrapping around the parking lot, like got to get in line before they sell out.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We would show up like 45 minutes early because I would have the kids and I'm like, I can't wait.
This absolutely.
Like, it's better to just get in and then not be down.
Yeah, or wait in line.
Just like the dedication, like that's the most fulfilling part. And there's nothing like starting a business like that so small and so grassroots that you're like quite literally connected with the people that are surrounding your booth every week. It was really special. It like really feels good. And it was just fun. It's fun to kind of reminisce and think about those times too.
Yeah. Yeah. That's just, I mean, it's honestly, it was crazy how fast it exploded for you.
Absolutely. I
mean, you kind of went from zero to 100.
Yeah. Yeah. That sure is what it feels like, you know? And I think, sometimes it looks like, you look back and you're like, how did we even make that happen? Or like, how did we even, there have been many areas or many like eras of the bakery where like things have taken a pretty, drastic or significant jump in production or volume or whatever. And it's like, what were the necessary steps that allowed us to get there? And it's hard to pinpoint all of them, but it's also like really cool to kind of celebrate those times too. You know, yeah. It seems like, a flash in the pan, but it's been, a good 4 or 5 years of just kind of dedicated week after week, effort is what I like to say.
And then I know your big thing is that you source your grains locally, mm-hmm. right? So how did you make those connections? Did you just drive out there?
Yeah, I think I had been really inspired back when I was recipe testing. That was one of the things I really wanted to pay close attention to, was like where we were sourcing the grains. That is easily our highest volume raw material, or just, something that we bring into the bakery. Mm-hmm. And while I was recipe testing, I had just been, following along to a lot of the bakers that I had seen on Instagram and what kind of flour they were using and mm-hmm. what sort of qualities it had, both for like baking quality, but also the flavor and like different textures you can get from different flours. And so that was really cool to me. And I didn't quite understand it back then, but over time I had kind of grown to understand why using local flour, using really fresh flour is important mm-hmm. in a bakery. And it's really cool. We live in a very fruitful area for local grains. Absolutely. And just local produce in general. We're in this sort of like miracle area in the state of Washington where we have so much access to really great produce. And grains is one of them, that is, extremely, extremely valuable. And so we work really closely with Karen Spring Mills, and they're up in the Edison, kind of Beau Edison oh, yeah. area, just the Skagit Valley. And I had noticed Kevin Morse, who's the owner there, really kind of, responding to a huge uptick over COVID of like all these, he noticed the grocery store shelves were completely empty.
Everyone was feeding their starter.
100%. And people were baking from home, and they cleared out all of the kind of commercially processed flour. And he saw that and was like, okay, there's an opportunity here to sort of give the people what they really want, which is like high quality grains, freshly milled. So the flour we're using, they have mill dates on the bag. So it was milled, maybe 1 month or 2 months ago. So it's really hyper, it's really fresh and, milled freshly, which is very important just for the quality of the bread mm-hmm. and how it reacts to a sourdough culture. Compared to kind of commercially processed flours that sit on shelves for ages and ages.
Right.
And they show up to your bakery and, who knows when they were milled or mm-hmm. even longer ago, who knows when they were, processed from the wheat fields. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of like hush hush in that area of the industry. And mm-hmm. Kevin Morse is all about, let's sort of like really shed light as far as what the process is and like, let's bring clarity to both the bakers and the community people who are eating the bread made from this flour and just really show them the process from beginning to end. Wow. And it's really cool. We got to, we got to work pretty closely with Karen Spring Mills, and we've had the opportunity to use some really specialty type flours and really find the flour that we enjoy working with as bakers. Mm-hmm. That's been really special. And it's something that it's sort of one of those pillars within my business that I really hold closely and don't ever really foresee letting go of.
Yeah. Well, it makes it you very unique as a baker. Mm-hmm. Did you watch the chefs? I don't know if you've ever watched Chef's Table.
Absolutely.
I can't remember her name, but the lady that opened La Brea Bakery.
Yeah, Nancy Silverton.
Yeah, that's her name. And how I think, didn't she have her own mill in her bakery?
She did. At some yeah. point? Yeah.
Is that something you ever foresee doing?
When we first started, I used what's called a little mock mill, and you're able to mill maybe, oh gosh. We used it specifically for one product, and it was our cottage, or it was our chocolate chunk rye cookie. Mm-hmm. And we would mill local gazelle rye flour that came from Karen Spring Mills. We would take the wheat berries and mill them and then add that fresh rye flour to the cookies. And it was like the flavor you get is just incredible. It's something that we've had to do away with just for volume sake. Like we couldn't keep up that little tiny mill.
Yeah, that little constantly on 24 hours a day.
Yeah, we'd have to have one employee just dumping wheat berries into, you know, rye berries into the mill. And so we've had to forego that, but it's definitely something that I'm interested in.
Yeah,
I follow pretty closely this bakery out in Arizona called Proof Bread, and they actually just recently upgraded their whole operation and have a dedicated facility for milling all their grains, which is really cool.
Wow.
John and Amanda both kind of like recite this this fact, and I'll probably butcher the numbers, but. You know, years ago, probably 100 years ago, there were like 25,000 mills, and now there's less than 1,000.
Wow.
Just because so many people are utilizing flour that is commercially processed in these big roller mills, people have kind of gone away from the stone milled, kind of old world, old fashioned style of milling grains. And that's why I really, you know, value Karen Spring Mills, because they are like sticking true to kind of the old world approach.
Well, it makes a difference too. I mean, your bread and just, I mean, in general, everything at the bakery tastes so fresh and good. Like if you buy a loaf of bread at QFC of A, like even I try to find like the best loaf.
Like anywhere. Even La Brea, which I know they were sold. So it's probably gone a lot more commercial than when she started it. But, you know, even that at QFC,
it just doesn't
it's
taste
not the same.
Like,
as
I'm like
baguette.
Every day I'm like, is it Thursday yet? Am I Thursday? They're like, I gotta go get some bread. And I always show up on like Wednesday. I'm like, oh no, I just drive by. I'm like, oh, pick up a loaf of bread.
We've got some exciting news on that front too.
Oh,
but
really?
To speak on the Nancy Silverton thing, I think even in that episode, you know, which was a huge inspiration when I was kind of coming up in the bread world, was like, she had grown La Brea to this thing where she looked back and was like, this has gotten too big. Like,
yeah.
The quality has decreased to a, you know, to a point where I'm not happy with this anymore. And she kind of wanted to revert back to some original form of what La Brea meant to her originally. Mm-hmm. And it was really cool to see that because, you know, there's really not a ton of visible content surrounding any areas of bread bakeries. That's changing now here in 2023, 2024.
Right.
But a lot of that information is just kind of not really talked about. And so being able to see someone like Nancy Silverton has kind of reverted back to literally making things with her hands across all of her restaurants in LA and kind of reverting back to that old school, like we really, you know, honing in on like this hyper like quality thing, whether she's making a plate of food or whether she's making a loaf of bread.
Right.
She had this chance to recognize that, whoa, this thing had gotten too big. And, you know, while that might be great for your, you know, P&L, it might be for your, it might be great for your business. It might not be the best for your customer or for the people who want really high quality bread. So it was cool to see that. And it kind of gave me some insight as far as if I were to open a bakery one day, which back then when I was watching that Chef's Table episode, opening a bakery was like so far out in the distance. Yeah. I don't even think it had even crossed my mind, but I kind of put that in the back of my head of like, okay, if I were to open a bakery, I know I'm going to, you know, maintain a certain size so as not to repeat the same thing that Nancy did.
Yeah.
But yeah.
And even to keep it in your awareness and mind's eye for the future,
because
I'm sure you'd love to grow and keep growing and, you know, maybe someday open a second location or I don't know what your plans are, but, you know, maybe keeping that in your forefront of like, you know, finding ways to not decrease your quality and not getting too big in quotes. That was a very interesting, it was almost a little sad.
It was. They kind of turned the story a little bit.
Yeah.
But it's cool to see that, you know,
and I can't remember if it was the same episode or a different episode, but they were talking about how bread is the one food that crosses all cultures and as a food. I can't remember what episode, but they were showing like, you know, in India, people making naan and even like the Middle East, their version of, I can't remember the name of their, but you know, that it's wheat is the one food that all, no matter how wealthy or not your country is that people rely on.
Absolutely. So, yeah, it's really like a cornerstone or a staple in almost anyone's diet. And I think that's kind of why we're seeing this weird convergence. I think you brought up like baking during COVID. Like it kind of is this like amalgamation of like, it's a comfort food in some ways. It also is very therapeutic to make. So when like something scary in the world is happening, like people kind of revert back to or rely on the process of bread making.
Comfort.
It smells
great too.
It's one of those things where like the process itself and also the final result, hopefully, fingers crossed, is very comforting, right? Like it brings this sort of, I can't think of many other things that are similar, you know, in that way.
I mean, we went through our sourdough phase and it was before COVID, but I think it was after watching Nancy's and like learning
gonna make a starter. We're going to keep that starter alive, which we did keep it alive for a while.
Yeah.
We made bread and
it was very dense a lot.
not a lot of air pockets, a lot of flavor pockets in there.
I love hearing everyone's story with sourdough, whether they're like, you know, successful baker or whether there's like a home baker looking to make their own bread. Like I love hearing the stories and I love hearing their trials. It's really cool.
Like focaccia, we did focaccia too.
Oh yeah.
That's a little harder to screw up focaccia.
It's a little bit more forgiving.
Sure. If it's dense, like, well, you kind of expect it to be dense anyway. So you're like, well, it's going to be okay.
Yeah.
I think sourdough making is so interesting because it's such a labor of love because you're feeding it every day and then you have to let it rise. And then it's the flour ratio as you're adding it later to make the actual loaf. And then it's like days later, you're finally making this bread and it comes out and you're like, you cut in moment of truth and you're like, oh no.
Totally. If it's any consolation, like those moments are still ever present in the today.
Good.
Like,
it's not
that makes
just
me feel a lot better.
Yeah.
You get someone whose bread tastes so good can say that. That makes me feel
absolutely
better about myself.
In a lot of ways, I've actually been, you know, taking on a few consulting clients for people who have really, kind of learned that starting a micro bakery from your home can be, you know, relatively, you know, self-sustaining and can actually be a viable business. Mm-hmm. And so I've taken on a few people and, you know, currently not, you know, charging for any of my coaching services or anything like that. But I really just want to see them, you know, kind of build on their skill sets and grow and show them that like, hey, it's possible, you know, you can do this. I think one of the things I wanted to mention was just that like in a bakery, we rely so heavily on a lot of our systems that we have that it sort of, it becomes less strenuous than just baking one or two loaves at home because you're putting so much pressure on these two loaves to be successful. In a bakery of our size, like we rely so heavily on, you know, monitoring temperature all the time, monitoring the, you know, the sort of ambient temperature in the bakery to sort of give us an almost exact educated guess on how successful something will be. And we're doing things the same every single day. So we can
it's a routine.
We can find our pocket and really stay in there and we can have some level of consistency that we really like.
I didn't even think about the temperature, but like, so that like in January when we had those 12 degree days, like what do you guys do in those moments?
Totally. I think the biggest thing, like the first thing I mentioned to someone that I'm talking through sourdough or like production at large, even if you're just making one or two loaves of bread, is if your starter is not, you know, being fed on a consistent basis or your starter is not healthy, your final bread, unfortunately, will not be healthy. And so you've got to have this really awesome relationship with your starter and make sure that that is being fed consistently and like performing consistently. And then your bread will likely perform similarly. But in the bakery, it can be challenging. Like, we keep our starter in a big 30-gallon tub.
I was just going to ask how big your starter was.
It's massive. Come Saturday, like for a big production day, we're making anywhere between, 2 and 3,000 loaves of bread a week.
Wow.
And so the starter bin grows and grows and grows. And, we have to put that in a place that is, viable for a healthy starter. So oftentimes that's a place in the bakery that's, between 78 and 82 degrees. We try to keep it nice and warm. So that might be by the oven, or that might be, if it's too warm by the oven, it might be a little bit further away. And it's just important that we monitor and we track our data, to give us the best results.
How do you keep up that starter then? Like, I mean, how does that work? What, What's the process for that?
Just like anything else, there's a system for that too. So we feed it twice a day and we...
It's like a dog.
Yeah, it's just like, it's like a dog, a kid, you know. It doesn't cry though, so yeah, that's pretty good.
Just bubbles.
Yeah, or it doesn't shed either. Well, sometimes we get starter everywhere, but no, it's just like anything else. We've got systems in place where we're feeding it based on how much bread we plan to bake the next day. Mm-hmm. And okay, so we don't have this this huge excess of starter discard is what people typically will call it. And so, yeah, we have a pretty calculated approach to feeding the starter only what it needs. It'll double in volume, and then we use it to make bread, and then we feed it again to sort of replenish what we had used that day.
And how did you start? So did you, is it your own starter? Did you get it? Did you
buy a starter online?
You can get them from different places. You know, you can buy a 500-year-old starter.
Absolutely.
Know, someone, you know, down the street.
I made mine myself back in, I want to say it was 2015, over in Pullman, just using some, you know, Eastern Washington, or I guess Central Washington grains. And yeah, just started it just like anybody else. Mm-hmm. You feed it a couple times a day, you get some, you know, some relative consistency. And yeah, you can, you know, make bread pretty quickly about after about a week, you know, of consistent feedings.
When you were first starting, because we found the same thing, that we weren't needing as much bread that our starter was producing. I guess we didn't know the ratios of how to feed it. I mean, totally. You have to feed it so much. And we were just going off what was the book you bought me? It's like some Swedish bread maker made like the Art of Making Bread, or like something he found at a used bookstore. So it had all the... which it was in European units, so I had to convert.
Grams, yeah.
But so we were just going off that, and I didn't know how to change the level. So we ended up like throwing away starter because I'm like, we have bread left because we didn't have kids at the time. And maybe we did, but they weren't eating it. I don't know.
Yeah, they were not.
Too much information. But anyway, do you ever find that you're having to throw away?
It's rare now just because we have it calculated. Mm-hmm. So like our system like calculates exactly how much bread we plan to bake the next day. If we didn't have that calculation and it didn't tell us exactly how much starter we needed and what ratio of flour and water to feed it at that given time, we'd definitely have, we'd have so much discard to like make a home for. The cool thing though, is if we ever do end up accidentally, you know, with a little too much starter and it imbalances our ratio, we'll use that in other products. So right now we're actually formulating a sourdough double chocolate muffin. We have a few other flavor variations on the horizon too. We really want to launch like a muffin program, basically, which is like a full menu of muffins that, you know, customers can come in and purchase a few of, or you can order for the office or whatever.
I was just going to say, I'm saying this for catering.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And so, yeah, like we could use sourdough discard in those muffins. Mm-hmm. We've used them in our pie dough before too. So it's pretty versatile. And all it really does is add a little complexity and flavor, you know, a little bit of a sour tang, to any product that you want.
Wow. How interesting. I'm fascinated. I could talk about this all day.
Home bakers may use them in pancakes or crepes, or you could really put sourdough discard in anything, as it's just flour and water, you know.
That's true. Oh, man. So, okay. So you got a new oven recently.
Yeah.
The saga of the oven.
Absolutely. It was a little scary situation we had going on.
Well, your other oven died basically right before.
Literally a week before we had planned to. And you can't plan that. That is like, you know, we were sweating, you know, but we made the best of it. Like we still had such a good time. Like I know that like bakers who, you know, have commercial spaces, they're like, oh my gosh, I'm about to cry at the situation. I had a lot of friends reach out and they're like, I'm so sorry. Like anything we can do to support. But really, we made the best of it. We have other ovens in the bakery that we use for pastries and pretzels and things like that. So we just kind of like, you know, you pivot, and we know how to pivot pretty well. We've had a lot of good practice there. And so, yeah, it was really crazy. But just like I had sort of determined, you know, 8 months ago when we had placed our order for this brand new deck oven, I was like, this one is going to fail. It's 40 years old. It's, you know, it's a German deck oven that a wholesale baker up in Everett had been using for all of its life. Mm-hmm. He installed it from the ground up. He did some sort of MacGyvery electrical work on the inside, and you could tell. And
sounds like your grandpa.
And, you know, a whole lot of respect for that guy. He just found a way to make this oven work. But after a while, just like with anything, 40 years on any oven, it's going to, you know, it's not going to stand the test of time. And it ultimately did fail. And so we were basically left with just the use of our convection ovens, which are, you know, a fraction of the size. Mm-hmm. So the output, we had to just make changes for that week. But we were super happy. I knew, like, in the back of my head, you know, this brand new oven is going to make us so happy as far as the efficiency changes, just as far as the quality and the bread it'll produce. Mm-hmm. And also the most important part is that we've got a team down in Seattle that can come in and work on this oven. They know exactly how to work on it. And so it's, you know, just like with any bakery, this deck oven is like the heart of the bakery, and you want it to be working 24 hours a day, 365. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, if this thing goes down, it's, you know, it's a big, big, you know, bummer for the bakery.
Yeah.
And so knowing that we have that sort of insurance policy on the oven, and we have a team that can come in and work on it at any given time, it makes me feel like at ease as a business owner, you know.
And where was that oven from? Where did
they get the new one actually shipped from Italy.
So from Italy to then Canada, I saw.
Absolutely. Yeah. It came into EM Baking Equipment up in Vancouver, and then they ship it down on a big freight flatbed truck. That's cool. It weighs about 8,000 pounds. Yeah.
Oh my
the
God.
Old one weighed, you know, 14 or 15,000 pounds.
Wow.
Too. So big pieces of equipment.
Yeah. What did you do with the old one?
The old one got scrapped. So they basically recycle all the materials. It's made mostly of steel. So I'm not sure how they would repurpose the steel, but the stones, I think, go to some sort of masonry. They can break them down or even use them in, as like sand applications or something like that. But yeah, I was very happy to see that go.
God,
happy to have the new one up and running and working.
It served us well. I was very happy to be baking on that thing, but I was just as happy to receive the new one as I was to see the old one go. So
yeah, I can imagine.
Good timing.
Thank God you had the foresight to
absolutely
order it. Cause if it, you were like, oh my gosh, it's going.
When you place an order for an oven like that, I was, you know, kind of advised that it was a 24 week lead time, and it was right there, 24 weeks kind of on the dot. And so yeah, I mean, I'm lucky we made that call.
It's a God shot
then.
Right there.
Absolutely.
Did you have it? Were you like, well, at some point this oven's going to go. We need to get one going.
It's been ever since I installed it. I was like, okay, this is the first priority that we are going to, you know, focus on.
Well, it was a part of the stepping stones, right? You know, I got you there to like create more. And
for sure. Yeah. We wouldn't, I mean, we were able to increase our production 6 times, you know.
Wow.
Yeah.
And are you baking bread like, is there someone there all night then, like baking? You always have someone working?
We have 3 full-time night bakers. So we are pretty close to 24-hour production these days.
Wow.
And most of that is, or a good portion of that is wholesale.
Okay.
Our retail presence is really strong. We're about 90% retail, 10% wholesale. Typically in a bread bakery, it's the other way around. Mm-hmm. 90% wholesale going out the back door to restaurants, you know, grocery stores, cafes, coffee shops. And 10% retail out the front door to your customers. We're the opposite. We're very grateful for that. We have a very strong retail presence and customers who visit us week in and week out. But yeah, you know, to answer your question, yeah, we've got a full team. And so, you know, that was the other thing that, you know, initially crossed my mind was like, I've got a team of people here. If this oven goes out, which it did, they don't have work to do, you know? And so, you know, we were able to pivot and sort of, you know, find opportunities for them, but yeah, it's an interesting business for sure.
Yeah. And when you have like a cult following, honestly, I mean, like people swear by, I mean, my favorite part is when I bring my kids in and they get, you know, the free
little pretzel bite.
And I'm like, I just have, I'm like, please just don't eat it. I'm like, I'll eat it. I'm like, if you don't want that, I'll take care of it for
everyone
you.
Everyone can be a kid. If you want a pretzel knot, we can get you a pretzel
That's
knot.
My favorite thing. That's my go-to is a baguette or, you know, loaf. And then a pretzel. Like I gotta have that pretzel every single time.
Those are great choices for sure.
And we just had the English muffins. Those were great. That's a new
the
addition.
English muffins were awesome.
Yeah, those have, you know, instantly become a top seller. So our number one seller was the country sourdough for the longest time. It's been that way since day one. The English muffins, we brought them to the menu the week we weren't able to make any sourdough. They instantly became a number one, both in volume and in revenue, which is absolutely insane. That doesn't typically happen in a bakery where
muffin.
We have like a pretty solid number one spot with the country sourdough, but the English muffins for whatever reason, you know, so we're still working on that product. And I think just kind of dialing in our consistency, but yeah, we're very happy about that.
Well, there's not a lot of options. I mean, it's the store. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know where else to get an English muffin.
Some
that's
nooks and crannies or what's the other one? I feel like they're just, I mean, she bought some like last week in I was like, wow, this is delicious. Like, this is perfect for my egg sandwich
that there you go.
I normally make. It was great.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
Yeah.
And then, so who was the who approached you first to get into the commercial business? Because I'm sure it maybe was on your someday, maybe I'll get into commercial, but right now I'm just holding on.
Absolutely.
To my retail.
We had been doing that pop-up there on the corner in Perrinville. And, you know, that was kind of the plan. That was like, we're going to do this indefinitely for as long as we possibly can. And really kind of, I looked at it as like market testing. Like, we're just going to see if this is a viable thing. Mm-hmm. I was very welcome to, this could either work and take off. This could, you know, fizzle out and not be a thing, right? Like, I had to kind of be at, I had to be at peace with that, you know, long-term. And, you know, pretty well into doing the pop-ups for about a year and a half, the property owner across the street where we're currently located reached out and said, hey, you know, Perrinville, I think, really needs a bread bakery, a bakery that's really just focused on bread. And this area in general is, you know, I think seeking that too. You know, I think we have a spot for you. And the original spot that we were shown was about half the size of what we're currently occupying. And it had one front door, which I knew in the back of my head was like, that's not going to work. I had, you know, I've worked at a couple of bakeries and cafes before starting the cottage. And I knew one thing for sure is high volume bread bakeries. You have to think about your raw materials are coming in on a pallet. And so I knew I needed a bay door, like a garage door. And I don't think that that original spot would have been viable for us with one front door. I can envision myself carrying one bag of flour into the front door at a time.
That would be rough.
And we go through two pallets of flour a week. So
Wow. It's,
you know, that would not have been, that would have been the reason we would have failed long term.
Shoulder out.
Absolutely. Yeah.
There goes your bag.
Absolutely. And so, yeah, we got introduced to this, to the space we're in now. It's about 1500 square feet. And we use up just about every square inch of that place. And yeah, you know, I'm super happy. I love Perrinville. Like, it's, you know, obviously like a little bit of a trek up from the Bowl in Edmonds, but close enough to where it's not too far away. Mm-hmm. And we've kind of like made it a home. I really like Perrinville.
It's a great area.
Yeah.
It's really seen a resurgence over the last 5 years. It kind of, I mean, businesses were going out and there was a lot of release signs. And I mean, the Hook's always been a staple, and the cafe across the street, Bistro 76, has been there for a while now, but it kind of was a strange little space for a while, but then the cupcake place next, I'm really bad with names today.
Melomia's.
That went in, and you guys are there, and the pizza place just opened.
Yeah.
And, so it's really seen a resurgence the last couple of years.
Well, yeah, you think about like when we were in high school, like I went to Meadowdale.
Go Mavs.
Drive past every day. Yeah, right. And like it used to just be that empty lot. And like there was a rough time for Perrinville where everything was like becoming dilapidated and just like, you know, no businesses were in there really. And it definitely has had a resurgence.
Yeah. I mean, we used to call it a ghost town. Like it's just kind of desolate.
The clown.
There's not really. Yeah, the clown.
Rest in peace, the clown.
Absolutely. Well, we've got some exciting plans. I got to talk to you guys off air.
Yeah.
For the clown. We might be bringing that back.
Love. You know, the clown, as scary as it was, there's nothing I enjoyed more than driving past that clown.
Oh, yeah.
On my way to school. It was just fun thing to see.
Yeah. It was infamous, I think.
100%. And for everyone that doesn't know, that has not lived in Edmonds their whole lives, in Perrinville, right by your pop-up, on the garage door, there was this clown that was like coming, they painted on it, that was coming out of the garage door. It was kind
like
of like
Kool-Aid Man.
what's the clown from the
Krusty?
The It clown.
Yeah, it was like the It clown. I think it might have been based off of that. And it was like coming out, and it was kind of a little scary, but it was there for as long as I could remember.
Oh, totally. The real ones know about the Perrinville clown.
100%.
That's for sure.
But yeah, the old clown of Perrinville.
Yeah, we may resurrect that in some form. I'm excited.
I love hearing that. And yeah, I mean, and now that you have like those homes that were built on the south side where that old business park used to be, the old game land center and stuff like that. I mean, I feel like it's a good location for being such a residential area all around it, right?
Absolutely.
It's such a I mean, Olympic View Drive is such a main drive for people to get down in Edmonds or out in Edmonds and go to, you know, Mukilteo and stuff like that.
For sure. So
you've kind of become a cornerstone of that area too.
Yeah. I feel like. I'm so excited to be there and also just so excited to see it expand and grow over time. I think it's just going to be, you know, I think it even still has more potential, you know? Yeah. And I'm excited to be a part of it and excited to kind of see it from the outside in too.
Yeah.
So who was your first commercial order?
First commercial order.
Is it the Calmeros?
Yeah, it would be. Yeah. Callie and Chris, yeah. They reached out, excuse me. And they really loved our pretzel products, you know, back in the day, we had been making those sandwich rolls that are now on their menu, mm-hmm. on their appetizer board. And they were like, we would really love to work with you. The one thing I really appreciate about Callie and Chris is just they're like, you know, they are super focused on local food.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you can see that on their menu. Their chefs dedicate a ton of time as far as sourcing the most local cheeses, the most local spreads. Produce, their entire menu is covered in, you know, local farms, and they're, you know, huge on supporting those local small businesses. Mm-hmm. And so when they reached out, I was like, you know, starstruck almost, because, you know, what they were doing almost seemed like, you know, chef's table worthy, like quality, as far as the cocktail bar goes. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, they've been huge supporters since day one and wholesale clients for almost 4 years now. And so, wow. Yeah, as a small business, like that was back when I was working by myself, you know.
Yeah.
We're a team of almost 40 now.
Wow. And,
wow, you have 40 people?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
38, 39-ish, wow. Here and there. Yeah, like back when I was working by myself, like an account like that meant guaranteed business every mm-hmm. single week. That was huge for me,
yeah.
You know. And, you know, furthermore, it was a chance for my audience to reach their audience and kind of commingle and, you know, kind of, you know, just appreciate that two businesses are working together to support each other and support local, you know. And so, yeah, I tip my cap to Callie and Chris. They're really great people.
Yeah, it's they're, so cool.
They're friends of ours.
And yeah. See, like your stuff on the menu, right? You know, absolutely. Cottage bakery bread. And you're like, I'm like, oh, it's going to be good.
Yeah, I mean, it's like it's a dream come true. You know, like I used to work at Columbia City Bakery mm-hmm. under who is now a great friend and mentor, Evan Andres, who's James Beard semifinalist, you know, 4 or 5 times over. And I would, you know, he knew I lived up in Edmonds. And so I was a you know, production baker. So I'd work 4 a.m. to noon. And then if the wholesale delivery driver had forgotten a couple bags, I would run those bags to those accounts. And then, you know, that was my chance to kind of explore restaurants in the city of like, oh, okay, cool. Like I'm delivering bread to, you know, Bar del Corso. I'm going to go visit them, get a glass of wine and kind of check it out. And I get to see our name on their menu. And like, that feels so cool as a baker. Like I made that, you know, 8 hours ago and now I get to enjoy it here on their menu. And so getting to do that, you know, with my own business is like a dream come true. You know, it's one of those, you know, small wins that we get to celebrate.
Yeah. Sometimes, I mean, I imagine when you started in, you know, over there in Pullman making bread, you never probably foresaw like, that you would see your business on menus and, no. You know, be such a like hit.
Yeah, no, I would never. There's so many other elements in the business too, where I'm like, there's no way I could have predicted this. I could have planned for this. I think too, and you know, this is the reason why I have to kind of pinch myself sometimes is like, it happens so fast, and which is not typical in a restaurant or yeah. like just any sort of food business. Is something happening that quickly just because of the, you know, I knew I wanted to operate this business from the ground up. I didn't want to take any outside funding and I would have to be really, really patient. And yeah, we still applied that patience and were able to build the business from the ground up. But it happened so, so fast. The reason why it takes super long for anyone else that has the same goals of building the business from the ground up and not taking outside funding is because the barrier to entry is like insane. It's, yeah. You know, nowadays, if I were to build out my bakery as it stands today, it'd be $750,000,
oh, wow.
You know, just to get your foot in the door mm-hmm. with the infrastructure, with all the small wares, raw materials, all of the, you know, fancy equipment that we have, like it's an expensive game, you know?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I mean, but truth be told, yeah, like I'm very grateful. All those like little small wins, you know, are very cool to sort of celebrate in the moment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what's on the horizon for Cottage?
Yeah.
Or what you can share.
Yeah, for sure. We've got some exciting plans here in the future. There's a lot of different areas that we could go. You know, we just want to take some time really and just like really kind of figure that out and figure out what the most viable path is forward. In working with bakeries in the past and working alongside restaurants and just kind of like seeing what's happening in the market. Like sometimes I notice some things getting a little bit too big too fast. Mm-hmm. And we definitely want to avoid that. And so, yeah, we're just kind of like trudging forward one foot in front of the other. If you visited the shop, you know that we are ready for some more space.
Yeah,
like we are ready to kind of like,
the seams.
Yeah, we're bursting out the seams for sure. And actively sort of finding new ways to be efficient each and every week, which is fun. But yeah, you know, I think we're kind of taking some time being patient and just kind of like seeing which path we should go down. As far as things happening within the four walls, you know, we've got some really cool new products on the horizon. One of the things I really love about kind of, you know, being on the outside now, I'm like not really in on production much anymore, filling in here and there and offering support and, you know, kind of coaching and teaching teammates. But we've really strengthened up our management team. So they're kind of operating the bakery as it stands right now. And they have full agency to create new products from beginning to end. And I get to kind of be there shoulder to shoulder with them, showing them exactly how to create a new product and bring it to the front counter. There's a ton of things to keep in mind, you know, bringing in certain raw materials, like focusing on local, what your product description is going to be. Do we have photos and video for this product to be able to market the product to, you know, to our customers? Product costing, all of these things, labor costing, and getting to show our management truly what goes into making a new product. Mm-hmm. People might on the outside might think like, oh, cool, like a sourdough chocolate muffin. Like that sounds fun and easy to whip up. It's like, yep, but it'll take 12 weeks of testing to make sure that we can arrive at this product on the front counter. And so we really hone in on that. And so that's been really cool. So yeah, we've got a really cool system built out to where we are going to be offering variations of products and like flavor variations of the products we currently create over time, including some new sourdough breads too.
Awesome.
So yeah, a lot of fun stuff on the product side of things. And then wholesale. I think wholesale is a big opportunity for us this year, is, you know, getting out to more restaurants and cafes and potentially some grocery stores.
I was just going to ask, do you see yourself in a grocery store eventually?
That's a real dream. You know, grocery stores operate a little differently than restaurants as far as a wholesale program goes. Yeah, like having like a cool end cap at a grocery store would be just a dream. And so, yeah, we're working with a few local grocery stores right now on how that might come to fruition. And so we're excited about that. But yeah, that's kind of all I can talk about right now.
Are you going to continue to be at the Edmonds Market and stuff this year?
Absolutely.
Summer and spring market?
Yeah, we absolutely love the Edmonds Farmers Market. It's such a cool market to be a part of. And so, yeah, we'll be excited to be back there on Saturdays.
Awesome.
Starting May, first week of May.
That's right.
Yeah, it's coming. Cool. It's around the corner here.
It's going to be here before you know it.
I know. It's wild.
This year's already flying. I mean, last year flew by. It's just, time just speeds up. It's crazy.
It is crazy.
Life is just on a like nonstop roll. Like, it feels like it was just last week that we were like standing in line waiting for a loaf of bread, you know, talking to your dad and stuff as he's like directing people and like going through the line.
With the traffic cones.
Yeah.
Those were good times. Yeah. That's for sure.
I love his traffic coordination. You know? An ode to his past, right?
Oh yeah. He's got good practice at that.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
Cool. Well, anything else you'd like to share?
No, I mean, thank you guys so much for having me.
Yeah, this has been so exciting.
You guys have this dialed in and just, I love being a part of it. So thank you so much.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you again.
See you on the next one.